Hello, I'm Preston Schleinkofer. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. This week we are discussing space weather, and it's a subject that I've been wanting to find somebody to talk about, and we have done just that. We have Ben Davidson on the show today with us, and he is the founder of Space Weather News and the Space Observatory Project. He is the author of the textbook Weatherman's Guide to the Sun. He created the Disaster Prediction app and leads the nearly 500,000 subscribers at the Suspicious Observers YouTube channel. Along with a statistics professor and NASA scientist, Ben was the first to show how the sun triggers our largest earthquakes in his 2015 paper, and he is on the forefront of science and space weather and Earth's changing magnetic field. Well, Ben, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
It's a topic that we don't really hear a lot in the news, and also we probably don't realize that space, the sun mainly, has a lot of effect on our weather here. Your background, which I'll post in the show notes, is quite impressive with your doctorate and your work with space weather and all that. So that'll be available for anybody who wants to look at his bio. It's also on your website.
Sure is.
Good deal. To just get started here, can you describe for us what is space weather and how it affects us?
Sure. Space weather would be, very simply, the light and the particles that interact with Earth from outer space. The majority of these things are from the sun. It's the light we get from the sun, and most of us know about the visible light and ultraviolet, but there's also infrared and microwaves and x-rays and radio waves and any number of other things. There's also the tiny electrified building blocks of matter, protons, electrons, and ions and other things like that. And that's called the solar wind. It blasts out from the sun in every direction 24 hours a day, and Earth is actually orbiting the sun within this outward streaming field of tiny electrified particles. And so it's the interaction with this charged particle field that we're orbiting in. You know, space isn't as empty as most people think, and the light that comes from the sun. And on top of that, there's a little bit of particle intrusion, I should say, from the rest of the galaxy and the rest of space into the solar system. And we take those into account as well. Those are called galactic cosmic rays.
Okay. So how do those galactic cosmic rays affect our world?
Well, the galactic cosmic rays, the electrified particles from the sun, and the light, which is electromagnetic waves, they all interact with different parts of the Earth, with our bodies, with the atmosphere, with the crust. Our atmosphere is mostly, the most prominent component in terms of how it moves around is water vapor. And if you've ever tried an experiment with static electricity and water, you know that water is attracted to electricity. And so it really is as easy as knowing that, well, there's something electric about the weather. It makes lightning. And then if you know a little more about the weather, you know that there's a constant amount of electricity flowing in the atmosphere all around us all the time. It might sound weird if you've never heard about it before, but we're living on an electrified planet. We have an electromagnetic shield around the planet called the magnetosphere, or for short, just the magnetic field. And we're orbiting within basically a sea of invisible electromagnetic waves and particles. And so all of these things are connected. They sort of couple together and seem to want to interact with each other a lot more than a lot of scientists have realized, you know, decades into the past.
Now, these things don't just come straight at us and then bounce off. These, like your emblem for your company shows, it's got the globe with all these blue and red It almost looks like a spider with 100 legs or more. It's very interesting how the rays interact with our planet.
Right. You know, they're for the most part, it's very good that we have that spider-looking thing you called it, which is Earth's magnetic field. It's a very good thing we have that because these things can strip away the atmosphere. They can change the chemistry of the atmosphere, you know, that thing we breathe. If we didn't have it there, the electric input into the weather would be quite terrifying. Mm. Not just, you know, very intense storms and large swings from hot to cold, but the kind of stuff that you might see in a Hollywood movie. If you ever saw that movie called The Core, where Earth's magnetic field fails and then they ridiculously get in that contraption that takes them to the center of the Earth and they try to restart the core. Well, before the movie gets ridiculous, everything there is pretty scientifically accurate. It would cause basically these massive lightning storms. There's going to be no more electricity on the planet if we ever see that day. Really the kind of stuff that could trick a bunch of our genius ancestors into thinking that gods were angry at them. You know, those same right. geniuses who invented architecture and geometry and philosophy, those same ones claimed that the gods got angry with them and did something. Well, what could happen to make them think that? This is the kind of thing. It's literally the worst possible scenario if you could lose your magnetic field as a planet like Earth. And so that's why it's important. And it really just acts as sort of the interface. It doesn't stop or bounce everything off. It sort of acts as this shield where, how can I put this? If you open a window when you're driving a car, there's an initial burst of that air as the pressure tries to equalize. And then, of course, as you're driving down the road, you still get the wind coming in the window, but it's not like that initial burst when you open the window. It's a matter of sort of energy pressure. If you could think of about air pressure or things like that, except it's plasma pressure, it's energy pressure. It's the thing that helps make sure Earth doesn't take in too much of that energy and basically go haywire.
Okay. Now, when my brother told me about you, he says, you got to check this guy out. He's got some great videos and other things out there. So I went and looked at a couple of your videos. They're really good. You also have a daily video that's only about 4 or 5 minutes long that gives people updates on various things that are coming out. But one of the videos that caught my attention was about the solar cycles that we're in. We're currently in a solar minimum. Can you give us a little info on what is a solar minimum and why is this one different?
Well, we are in a solar minimum and within a relatively short time period in terms of, you know, Earth and astronomical times, we're going to be likely going into what's known as a grand solar minimum. Now, the sun has cycles. It's got a main 11-year cycle where for a couple of years, the sun is really active with something called sunspots and then solar flares where we get a lot of those X-rays. And they create these explosions of those charged particles that make the solar wind, those little electrified bits of matter, the protons and the electrons, much denser and more energized. And then for a couple of years, it tends to not really do that so much. And then it starts up again. And that cycle's about 11 years. But over the long time period, that 11-year cycle sort of goes up and down on another curve, on a larger curve. And that one tends to be about 400 years. We saw a lot of activity over the last century. The last time we were in a very low point on that larger cycle was about 400 years ago. And we've seen a lot of evidence that we are probably only one more cycle away before we actually drop into this grand solar minimum period here. And that's when, you know, things can really start to get scary in terms of the weather. There's opportunities for things to get scary for different reasons before that, especially because, like I said, we have probably one more cycle to go, and the sun does appear to have a fair amount of magnetic energy left to it. And so we're probably going to be expecting some intense solar flares and other things like that over the next couple of years. But after that, a lot of the data is indicating that we could go into a sort of a cool down period, a snooze, if you will, on the sun. And it has a little bit of a dropping temperature effect on the Earth. But really what it does is it extremifies everything. So, yes, you may get a a 65 degree day, warm and sunny in January when you're used to being cold, but you may also get snow in late May and June, four or five weeks after you've planted what you were trying to plant. You might have stronger storms or larger floods or longer droughts that are more intense, things like that. And so this happens as the pressure and the temperature differentials that control a lot of the weather, a lot of it is just temperature and pressure. These things are amplified, and not just in terms of intensity, but how fast they change when you add electricity to a system. This is sort of basic physics applied to atmospheric chemistry and you know, the global atmospheric models. Basically, it makes things more extreme and speeds them all up.
So yeah. You say speeds it up. How would it speed things up?
So a great example is if the average amount of time that a hurricane exists is, say, 2.5 days.
Right.
All right. Maybe during this period, it will only be 1.5 days, but its peak winds will be 30 to 40 miles an hour stronger.
Oh, okay.
So essentially, we aren't really necessarily changing the overall amount of energy that is released by that storm, even though, okay, maybe we will see a little bit more energy with the increased energy, but you know, input to Earth from galactic cosmic rays and things like that. But in general, it's going to just be a changing of the weather to make it weirder, more extreme, such that we see things that we're not used to seeing. It's going to look like the world's nice patterns have turned on us.
Okay. So four seasons may turn into eight.
Right. And you might not even really be able to determine when one season ends and when another begins. Not that, you know, you can sit there every, you know, March 21st or September 21st and say, oh, there it is in the air. There's spring. There's autumn, you know, but that's sort of the idea. You know, for those people living in the United States, imagine that you've got super hot days in November, but you're remembering not being able to send your kids out on Halloween because there was a foot of snow. You're on hole number four, holding your five iron, waiting for the group ahead of you to get off the green because it's 65 degrees on November 15th. And you're sitting there remembering, how in the world was there a foot of snow on the ground at Halloween, kind of thing, if that can paint the picture for you.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned solar flares. Our audience here has some familiarity with solar flares, and because we've talked about it with other guests, solar flares and coronal mass ejections. How would this ending of the minimum, the solar minimum, going into towards a solar maximum, how would that increase our threats from flares and coronal mass ejections?
Right. Well, you know, as I mentioned, you know, and I only mentioned that briefly before, I'm glad you're giving me a chance to get back to it. So let's actually take one step back further. So there's a reason why I was describing that magnetic field and how dangerous it is to lose it, because right now we are losing that magnetic field very quickly. We're in the middle of a pole reversal, magnetic excursion, pole shift. There's 1,000 names for it online. Frustratingly so. It actually makes it more difficult to find all the good information. But that's what we're in the midst of right now. And we saw during the last sunspot cycle, when the sun was active and giving us sunspots and solar flares, that some what I would call mediocre to mid-level, you know, maybe slightly above average solar storm effects were causing major grid problems. They were causing airspace to be shut down. PlayStation Network went about a year and a half where every little jot and tittle in the solar wind, I swear, shut PlayStation Network down for an hour.
Really?
And it's the kind of thing where, well, why on earth was that happening? What is the explanation for what we saw in 2012 and 2013 and 2015 and things like that? Well, the only way that relatively weaker events on the sun could cause very, very serious events as if that shield is weakened. It's getting through the shield even better. And that was part of a major presentation we did in 2015 called How Close We Came. Because in the summer of 2015, we actually almost lost it all. The solar storms, had they been just a little more intense, would have started taking out grids on a massive level. Airplanes in the air would have been at major risk, things like that. It happened again in 2018. There was a solar storm of 2018, and for a while, nobody even really knew what caused it. Now, we've been able to go back and take a look at some of the data and see, there was this little hitch in the solar wind where the magnetic effects of it were a little stronger, and it seems to have been a little bit hotter temperature and was moving a little faster. These are the kind of things where you spend 25 minutes learning about space weather and you can spot these things, you know, the ones that are important. A child in middle school can spot the big ones, but this was virtually nothing, and it caused a major geomagnetic event here on the planet. And so here we are about 15-20% down in the shield, with it continuing to lose magnetic power, and the sun is getting ready to give us one last shot before that grand solar minimum snooze here. And I'm as worried about this planet getting thrown back into the dark ages as I am about some weather extremification about a decade away.
Now, that brings up a couple quick questions. One, we have satellites out there that are supposed to be detecting this stuff, and two, what type of extreme generational shift are we looking at with this threat that you just mentioned?
Well, you know, the satellites are how we're getting some of this information. Basically, we know that the magnetic field is never supposed to stay perfectly stable, but at most it's supposed to change, you know, a fraction of 1 degree every decade or so. Well, from the 1850s or so to the year 2000, we lost about 10% of the strength, and the magnetic poles started to move. And then from the year 2000 to 2010, 10 years ago, they said we lost another 5%, and that would imply a major acceleration. Now, assuming we haven't had another acceleration, that would be another 5%. We're down to about, you know, 20% down in the field right now. The magnetic pole motion has not slowed down at all. If you guys have heard anything about them having to change stuff at airport runways, or the unprecedented change that had to be made to the world magnetic model so that satellites and GPS functions would work, this is all because the magnetic field is changing, and it's never changed so much that they've had to actually do these things, and they're having to do them quite a bit recently. And it's starting to get concerning. And so here we are. We have evidence from 2012, 2013, 2015, and then from 2018 that, hey, we are actually starting to see the effects of having a weaker shield against the sun. Well, what happens now that the sun's been asleep for a couple of years, and now it's getting ready to kick back into gear and really give us these things? And I mean, we're really talking about the potential to lose electricity on this planet and our electrified way of life. We're talking no food at the store, no water from the tap, no heat, no air conditioning, no gas at the pump, no ATMs, no phone to call the police, no police coordination whatsoever. No vehicles are working. No factories are working. Most of them have probably burned to the ground. Most things with copper wires could burn to the ground. We're talking about literally the complete reset of society. This isn't, oh, you replace a circuit, or you go and you flip a breaker. The transformers have exploded. The factories have caught on fire. There isn't even anything left to build something to go fix it with or to replace it with. You're literally back to square one there. Just you and everybody around you, just as hungry and thirsty as you are.
So we're talking about before Little House on the Prairie.
Well, yeah, a little bit before Little House on the Prairie. And, you know, the main issue, if we can get through this sunspot cycle without getting tanked by a major solar flare, will be food security when the grand solar minimum comes and the chaos that could ensue from there. Everyone's got to be thinking about food security if we get through this sunspot cycle. But people got to be thinking about food now from a prepping standpoint. I don't know if you go into prepping on your show at all, but this is an astrophysicist saying that I am prepped to the ceiling over here. I thought there may have been a need to it. I got a little more afraid than I think I may have needed to in years past. But what's happened over the last decade has proven that we have millions of years of Earth cycles and sun cycles corresponding with math telling us what probably is going to happen, and now we are actually seeing it in observable reality, the effects of these changes taking place. And so there's only so many coincidences of science and if you want to call it nature or God's creation, I don't mind either one, but there's only so many coincidences between those two things you can ignore before you say, I got to stand up and do something.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody was living high and large until COVID happened. And then, you know, with that followed by all this this chaos in the streets, you know, if people haven't begun to think as preppers, then I don't know if this show will wake them up, but everybody should be a prepper by now.
Well, you know, you're actually making an interesting point. I want to know who is watching HBO these days? Who is watching science fiction right now? Who is writing science fiction right now? All these people are out of a job and they don't know it. All you have to do is actually take a look at the world right now, and there's enough crazy stuff to keep you entertained for a lifetime. And then you realize that all the stuff you're going to see on the news doesn't even hold a candle to the stuff that they're not telling us about what can happen with the sun and the magnetic field and the weather.
I think a lot of it is they don't want to tell us because they don't want to scare everybody. Well, sometimes you need to be scared straight, so to speak, you know, to use an old term. But this is what Civil Defense Radio is all about, trying to wake people up to the need that they need to be prepared in their homes, their neighborhoods, and their communities, because that's where the nucleus is. That's where survival is. You're not going to survive as just you and your family alone in one house, not with everybody else going through hard times. You're not going to survive because they're going to be knocking on your door and or even busting it down. So you need to network. You need to create that community. Just like the pilgrims, when they first landed on this nation, they were in a community. They came as a community, they were a community, they survived as a community, and they grew from that. And that's what we need to be thinking about as far as whether it's a natural or man-made disaster that's coming. You know, there's another COVID coming. There's another civil unrest coming. There's a grand solar minimum that's almost at its peak, going back towards a maximum that's going to bring helter-skelter from the sun. So we need to be a lot more aware than what we are as a nation.
Yeah, I would say that's probably a pretty good way to put it. And you also have to be careful about it too, because creating that local network is not just, you know, posting up a sign saying, hey, everyone, I'm a prepper. I have all this stuff. Why don't you be a prepper too? Because they're probably sitting there thinking to myself, well, no thanks. I'm just going to go take your stuff whenever it all goes down, and you can be the prepper. And so there's like the smart way to do it.
Yes, there is.
As well, which you have to gauge based on, you know, your own. And, you know, that one's all based on how well you know your community, how well you know your neighbors, other things like that.
Well, if you can't do it in your local neighborhood, then you have to get with like-minded people and start planning now to go someplace, to somebody else's place or somebody else's cabin or whatever. You gotta make plans, because you're only going to survive as a community. And whatever that community is, you know, that's what you choose. But it ain't going to be just you and your wife and kids. It's
right.
It's impossible. You know, that's what I told my wife. I said, you know, we can take care of this house as long as we're both awake. But we can't stay awake 24/7, and so we have to have other plans. So, you know, that's you've given us a lot of great information so far, and you have a lot of really good stuff on your web. You have two websites. You have a Facebook page. You also have YouTube. So, can you give us just some information about what you have on these various pages?
Right. So when it comes to all these websites, and there's actually quite a number of different websites, including ones dedicated to things like the magnetic reversal, and one dedicated to space weather, one dedicated to how electricity triggers earthquakes and how the sun's involved in that. But it all really stems from the YouTube channel, which is Suspicious Observers. And, you know, from there, you pretty much get all the info, especially the daily updates. You'll hear me mention the different websites when they're relevant to what is being discussed. The only other thing I would mention is you also get to hear about the disaster prediction app. There are a number of folks actually using some of the forecasting techniques and atmospheric electricity to predict large earthquakes. There was a big one in Mexico not long ago, and a couple of our folks actually predicted that one based on some of the electric signals that the Earth was giving off. But also, it's got real-time alerts for those earthquakes, for solar flares, for their geomagnetic storms when the shock wave actually hits the planet. And I also have the ability to type stuff in and send it to you, which I almost never, ever use. But if I happen to notice that there is a field collapse event ongoing, that's my direct line into your hands, to your cell phone there. And I tend to believe that in that sort of event where it'll be chaos very, very quickly, you could probably have a couple hours to a day's notice before the world really can see blatantly with their eyes that it's all over.
Right. And then it's chaos like we've never seen before.
Exactly.
The stuff that's going on in certain cities around the country right now is nothing compared to what this country will turn into without electricity, without rule of law, without government. There's this place would devolve into Mogadishu very quick.
Most academics who study and who have asked this exact question and tried to model it suggest that the only way that there would not be massive amounts of cannibalism in things like the big cities due to food, you know, due to the circumstances,
right,
would be if the city was like hit by a tsunami or a meteor or something. It was completely wiped off the map. Other than that, the survivors of human species with our dependence on our electrified way of life, we're going to be in big, big trouble.
Yeah. Well, the farmers, they're going to be in trouble too, because a lot of them are dependent on new technology to get things planted and harvested. So it's going to be a big problem in many ways. And those are things that need to be fleshed out right now while there's still blue sky. But
right.
Black sky is a situation that we don't want to see. And unfortunately, it's one of the threats that I believe is in our future. And it's something that most people are, I don't know if they're unaware of it or if they're too afraid to broach the subject and actually delve into it. But it's something that needs to be done.
It's very hard to see. And I actually think you were right in your guess there. I don't think that it's a coincidence that these things we're seeing in society and culture are happening at the same time. And the simplest way I can put it is, if you give a magnet more juice, if you make it more powerful, you increase what's known as the polarization, North Pole, South Pole. You polarize it and strengthen that polarization. Well, as we're losing the magnetic field, this planet is juicing up. Something else you can look for canaries in the coal mine. If you've seen any of these amazing earth discharge lightning events where it looks like literally the lightning is coming up out of the earth and something that looks like a thunderbolt of the gods, there have been a number of these recently, and those are going to start to increase more because Earth's magnetic field lets in too much energy. It slowly couples down, it gets to the ground, and then there's a discharge event pathway that's made available by normal cloud lightning hitting the ground, but it's basically like touching the wires together. It's letting the earth discharge at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The crust is a weak insulator and it's able to trap a lot of that inside of it. But these are the sorts of things we look for, and we're seeing it in people too. The polarization of people, the emotional instability of people. One of the things they notice about days with solar flares or when there are high cosmic rays, they notice a spike in the number of suicides and the number of people with hospitalizable depression or anxiety. They have noticed, you know, in psychological studies, they've noticed people's moods being more altered or unstable, including their emotions. People's cognitive ability declines when we have a lot of that energy coming in. And so literally we're watching everything around us, including ourselves, change, but it's all changing together in a very natural way, to the point where if you were a walking, talking human being that manages to get around day to day without getting hit by a bus, you still might have no idea that these changes were going on. They're impossible to see for somebody like that who's not looking for them.
Well, that's going to have to be the last word. Reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, on Twitter at civil_def_radio, and on our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And also, I wish to thank Ben again for being on the show, and I want to thank you, our friends out there who are listening to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.